On Tech News Today, the Apple Watch sold out in minutes. The Chinese government censored American websites, and PC sales had the worst quarter in 6 years. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
It's time for Twit's annual audience survey, and we want to hear from you. Please visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It only takes a few minutes, and your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. We thank you so much for your continued support. twit.tv/survey.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, April 10th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 50-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/twit and receive a $50 Visa gift card when you get a loan. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. Welcome to the show. My name is Mike Elgin, and our co-anchor today is Mashable senior tech analyst Christina Warren. How the heck are you, Christina?
I'm great. I was not able to get the Apple Watch that I wanted in time for, the April 24th delivery date. So I've got to wait until June. But other than that, I'm doing really well.
It's a tragedy being played out across the land, across the world, really. There are a lot of tears in Apple stores and on the Apple website across the globe. But you have in your possession something that's very nice and very precious. Can you show that to us? And there it is.
Yes. This is the new gold. This is the new MacBook. It is so thin. It is so tiny. Let me open it up and show it to the audience. It is gorgeous.
And it's just maximum keyboard space.
Maximum keyboard space. And, this Retina screen, it is so thin. I absolutely adore this thing for its size. It's really, really an amazing piece of machinery.
They're pushing the thinness so much that they actually stopped lighting up the Apple logo on the back, didn't they?
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, the Apple logo, it's just like on an iPad or a phone where it's kind of the embossed, in this case, gold. But it's not actually, they didn't put the circuitry in to light it up. I think that's for two reasons. One, for the thinness, and two, there probably just wasn't enough room to get the light in there. And two, for the battery saving. Save battery life. Don't bother lighting up an exterior LED.
It's essentially a mirror. They're hoping that the light in the room will catch and make it look like it's illuminated. So it's a cheap way.
And on this gold one, you know what it absolutely does? It doesn't come across that well because, I'm kind of on a webcam. But this gold, there's some amazing photos that Luke Leonard, our photographer, took of this thing that we literally call, MacBook, gold MacBook porn on our website. This thing just looks unbelievable. A lot of people that I talked to before we got it in thought that the gold was going to be overwhelming. They thought that it was going to look maybe overly feminine. It's this great champagne color. It's the same color that they have on the iPad and on the phone. But on the MacBook, it just looks really nice. And it's just kind of adds like it just makes an already great device. I mean, this thing's going to look great in space gray or silver, too. But in gold, there's something about it that just really makes it stand out.
Apple's really good at that kind of thing where they get the color just right. And I think one of the reasons people thought it might be overwhelming was that there have been fan created versions of a gold MacBook or MacBook Pro or whatever online for years, and they're shiny. They look like bricks of gold almost in their shininess. In fact, the entire thing looks kind of like the Apple logo, just complete mirror of shininess. And they look awful. They just look cheesy and kind of garish. But this champagne gold just looks very nice. It takes you a second to really perceive that it's gold. It's so subtle in a way, at least from what I've seen. So anyway, that's really cool. And that's a Mashable review unit, right? And you're gonna buy one for yourself later?
You know what? For me personally, I'm probably not, just because I have a MacBook Pro that I really like, and I use the MacBook Air day to day. Maybe the next generation, I'll be able to do that. For me, it's just not powerful enough right now. But my mom is definitely getting one. And if I had one of the new 5K iMacs, this would be probably my ideal secondary machine. But I mean, what, as I said in my review, you know, this is the future of notebooks. And the same way that every notebook we see now looks like a MacBook Air, in 5 years, everything we see is going to look like this, probably less than 5 years. Everything's going to be taking its cues from this. And all of the kind of the hand-wringing about USB-C aside, I mean, that's kind of, you know, there's a trade-off and there's a compromise there. But I feel like, especially with future iterations, this is really going to be kind of the future of where everything's going. And I really like it. I think that if you're somebody who has the means, as Ferris Bueller would say, you know, I highly recommend it. But also, you know, if you're somebody who doesn't need the most powerful machine out there, but you want the most portable and the thinnest Mac you can get, it's really hard to go wrong with this thing.
Yeah, well, you know, sell your car, get the 5K iMac and the gold MacBook and you'll be all set. You'll be walking.
There I go.
But all right, well, let's jump into our top story. Apple Watch try-ons and pre-orders have been taking place worldwide. Many of the Apple Watch models quickly sold out, with in-store pickup or home delivery slipping to June for some or all models. And of all the retail experiences in the world, probably the most posh is at Galeries Lafayette in Paris. Amar Tour is a reporter for The Verge and joins us now from Paris. How you doing, Amar?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. Now, Galeries Lafayette is a fancy department store. Were the Apple Watches for sale on a table, in a kiosk? Were they in a special section of the store? What did the Apple department look like at Galeries Lafayette?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right. It is very, you know, high class, very expensive. This is where, you know, people go to get Chanel bags and Dior and, you know, Tom Ford. And it's, so that's kind of the milieu that it's in. But it's kind of, surprisingly, very much like an Apple store, at least at Galeries Lafayette. It's kind of in a circular part of the store, and it only takes up maybe a third of one side of that walkway. And the watches are displayed in kind of long, you know, wooden tables under glass. Some are out to be that customers can kind of play around with. But overall, you know, I was kind of surprised that, and, you know, I think they did a pretty good job of kind of identifying it as an Apple space, if you will, a retail space, without kind of, you know, shouting for attention or kind of distracting from everything around it. But it was kind of, you know, it just kind of looked like an Apple store, to be honest.
Now, did anybody stand in line to look at it? Was there a big crowd of people lined up looking at the Apple Watch?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was funny because I use Apple products, iPhone, you know, MacBook Air, iPad, everything. But I've never gone to like one of these, you know, first day opening sort of things. So I didn't really know what to expect. I kind of figured it wouldn't be that frenzied or crazy as, say, like an iPhone launch where people are kind of racing to be the first person in or whatever. But anyway, you know, I went there kind of early. I got there around 8 or 8:15, I think, and the doors opened at 9 a.m. And I was kind of surprised there were only two people in front of me, one of whom was a student. They're both in their 20s. And one of whom had been waiting there overnight. They both slept there overnight. The first person claimed to have been there since Wednesday. I wasn't entirely sure if that's true, but yeah, I was the third person in line, and it was, I think, at its maximum maybe about 30 or 40 people before the doors opened. So not quite as huge as you know, maybe some may have expected.
If somebody really did wait there since Wednesday, they must have felt like a schmuck. If in fact they have schmucks in Paris. I don't know if they do or not. One of the things that I've been curious about is we've been hearing about these premium places to buy the Apple Watch. And I'm not clear whether they're just selling the gold edition version or whether they're selling all versions of the Apple Watch at these high-end locations.
Oh, no, yeah, it's all versions. They had everything from the Sport and the watch, you know, the mid-range watch, and then all the way up to the $17,000 or $18,000 edition. So, yeah, it was very much, you know, the full spectrum. The big difference, though, of course, is that for the editions, you have to make an appointment, which I was able to do because I was the third person in line, and I got it at 9 a.m. And that is, you know, those watches are kept kind of in a separate area away from everything else, whereas the Sports and the Apple Watch are kept under the table, actually, in these kind of drawers that magically open, according to Apple, but with kind of RFID or something. But yeah, it's the full range. And it's also worth noting the editions do not work. I mean, they're not operational. They just kind of play a demo reel. over and over again. And the person that I spoke with, the person who helped me through this process, was telling me that that's apparently for security reasons, or I guess they didn't want people kind of playing around with them and touching with them or touching them. So,
yeah, that was my same experience when I was at the Fifth Avenue store in New York earlier today, is that the watches were just playing a loop. And it seems like they probably had the same setup at the store you were at that they have at the actual Apple store. It seems like they probably replicated that experience. One of the things we found out today is that the Apple's out of warranty service fee is going to be like, it's going to range between, you know, $229 and $2,800 for the sport edition, and all the way up to the edition, the sport model, all the way up to the edition. The out of warranty battery service is going to be $79 with a plus applicable shipping and handling. Does this seem a little bit high to you?
Well, you might be asking the wrong person, because I don't really plan on buying one. I think the price point is still it's still too high for me. And honestly, I'm not sure Apple, as Nilay Patel mentioned in our review, I'm not sure Apple has really kind of done a good job of convincing me why I need this, basically, and what kind of niche this would fill in my life. But yeah, I mean, the price is obviously still steep. I think across the board, even for a sport, at least for me. I'd probably wait until the second or maybe even third generation.
I feel pretty much the opposite. I've been waiting for a really cool watch like this for probably 10 years, and I've been avoiding buying other watches, just thinking that we're just about to have a really cool smartwatch. And this is the one I really think that I really, really want. But my experience through my son ordered one for himself and for me, because I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I didn't want to be up at midnight. So he volunteered to do that. What was interesting was the Apple website for him wasn't up for 10 minutes, but the mobile site started working at 12:04 a.m. California in a Pacific time. He placed the first order for his watch at 12:04 a.m. and they gave him an April 24th ship date. So he locked out. And then he immediately, at 1 minute later, at 12:05, placed the order for my watch, and the ship date was May 13th to the 24th. And so lots of people just a couple minutes after that, or a few minutes after that, got ship dates in June for some models. And so this is really, we don't know how many they manufactured, how many they have in stock, but this appears to be a home run. And my guess is, now that we know that the Android Wear shipped, 700,000 units from when it shipped mid-year last year through the end of the year, Apple almost certainly has the, far exceeded that in the first few minutes. Christina Warren, what do you think that is going to happen now with the ship dates? Is this just going to go to July and, all the way on? Or are we through the woods here at this point?
I don't know. I mean, I think it depends. My hope is that actually they're overestimating how long it's going to take, and that once they see the demand from the first day pre-orders, they can ramp up their factories and really start getting the production line going faster and do more of these things. My hope is that maybe they needed to wait for the orders to come through to really kind of get a gauge of which models we need to make more of, what sizes, what types, and what bands do we need to expedite. So I don't know. I mean, I think that it's hard to say. Obviously, they're very supply constrained. I mean, you were seeing August on some of the different editions. You see in July. I mean, these things, there was only one model that I was able to see at, 10 a.m. this morning, or 9 a.m. this morning, rather, that was had a ship date of between, the 24th and May 8th. So I think it's really just going to depend on what they can do with their productions, with their supply chain. I mean, I have to think that after the frenzy they've been seeing, they're going to try to ramp up the lines and get more of these things made. But I think it really just depends. I mean, my fear would be, and I think that they need to be worried about this, if it goes on too long, I don't know how many people are going to want to buy a product that they're going to be saying, "Whoa, you're not going to get it until September." I mean, at that point, that's such a long ways away. That's really kind of teetering into, this is not going to work. Plus, as we should note, right now you can only get it online. They're not even going to have it in stores outside of the boutiques where Amara's You know, they're only going to be available online initially, and they won't even be in the Apple store. So they're going to have to do something to get these things cranked out faster. And my hope is that the time that we're seeing right now will actually end up being less.
And Virgil in the chat room says that, you know, isn't it a bad idea to buy the first generation product? As far as I'm concerned, the answer is no. You buy the first generation and then you sell it to Gazelle or you know, wherever you're going to sell it, or pass it on to a friend or whatever. And then you get the second generation. You get all the generations, like at least that worked for the iPad.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the resale value on the watch is probably not going to be as good as what we saw on the first iPad, especially if they drastically changed the design to the second generation. That said, you know, there's something about getting a first-gen product. And if you're doing this, this is not your first rodeo. You know, I think most people who are buying this kind of know what they're going into. And if you go, to me, as a user, as somebody who's buying one of these things, who's spending a ridiculous amount of money on a watch that I know I'm just going to replace in a year, I'm going into it without understanding. I think if you go into it without understanding, it makes the entire process much easier to bear. And the amount of money you quote unquote lose for only enjoying your device for a year, that much easier to bear.
Yeah, absolutely. Amar Tour, now you said you're not going to get one of these things. What would make you want one? Would it be a lower price? Would it be additional functionality? Like, what is it about the Apple Watch that is not compelling to you?
Well, I think I should mention that I don't wear a watch to begin with. So that's already one thing. But, you know, as I mentioned, it's really more, I mean, price is obviously a factor. Neil, I mentioned in our review, you know, the apps the apps are still in a very nascent phase. I think a lot of people really aren't quite sure, you know, I guess how to interact with on this interface. It's, I get the sense that it's very kind of still, you know, wild, wild west with this, which is exciting, you know, and I'm very intrigued to see what comes of it. But, you know, so far, you know, it seems like they take 20 seconds to load. And, you know, I just don't get the sense that there's the same sort of ecosystem that was already built in to, say, like the iPad, for instance, which, you know, I didn't think I was going to buy at the beginning. I had similar doubts. You know, I thought, why do I need a big iPhone? And then, you know, eventually I realized what kind of purpose it serves. So I think it's just more, I'm more in sort of a wait and see phase, and then you know, wait and see what the world does with it.
I think the iPad, the first generation iPad, was an easier sell because we knew exactly what it was going to be. It was going to be a big ass iPhone that doesn't make phone calls. And we understood that. But right. With the Apple Watch, I think that like the original iPhone, it's not going to be clear what it is and what you do with it until the apps really hit. And I think it's the apps going to kind of make people go, that's pretty cool. That's just my expectation anyway. So Amar Tour is at TheVerge.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at AmarTOO. Thanks for joining us today, Amar.
Thanks for having me.
Got more news for you coming up, but first, let's talk about ZipRecruiter. This is the best way there is to hire. It's the modern way to hire, because instead of going from one site to another site to another site to another site, you just send your job to more than 50 job boards and social networks with a single click. And then there are so many different ways for you to process this job application and interviews and stuff quickly, because for starters, ZipRecruiter will filter your applicants by qualified and not qualified, by your criteria. You can use, you know, of course, the social networking recruiting is very, very powerful, and you can discover candidates in ZipRecruiter's massive, more than 500 million person database. So just for starters, just searching, getting access to ZipRecruiter's database is a huge, huge advantage. You can quickly screen applicants, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by more than 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners and viewers can try ZipRecruiter for free, plus get 30% off your first traffic boost. Traffic boost is like a turbocharge, turbo mode for your job search by going to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. Google signed a pact yesterday to pool some of its wireless technology along with similar technology from other companies to make licensing standards easier and cheaper. Susan Decker is a patents reporter for Bloomberg and joins us now. Welcome to you, Susan.
Thank you. Welcome. Thanks for having me.
What types of wireless technologies are we talking about here? Are these LTE type of technologies?
Exactly. It's the LTE and 4G technologies, part of the 3GPP standard, that's pretty much being adopted probably more quickly than they expected. And that's one of the reasons why VIA Licensing was very happy to get hook up with Google on this, because it is a technology that's being widely adopted in mobile phones all over the world, and particularly in the U.S.
Is this something that Google is considering to be a solution for the problem of kind of the endless patent litigation?
Well, you know, Google has its own, it has a lot of policies where they're trying to limit litigation. There was a lot of problems that they had when they got the Motorola mobility patents. What are you going to do with them? They inherited this very contentious fight with Microsoft over standard essential patents, which puts them kind of inconsistent and in a position that's kind of difficult and inconsistent with their other positions on patents. So this is a way that I think that they can come out and say, listen, guys, we made these arguments on the Microsoft case that other people may not like, but we are very much dedicated to this idea of making patents affordable, making technology affordable, and in the end, hopefully helping consumers.
Now, there's a dividing line in the industry between companies that are in favor of this kind of pooling and those who are against it. What are the advantages and disadvantages generally to big companies for either pooling their technologies like this or just going it alone?
Oh, it all comes down to money. If you're a company like an Ericsson or a Nokia or a Qualcomm that spends billions of dollars of research every year trying to figure out what people are going to do on their phones in 10 years, you want to get compensated for that. You want some money back and you want to make a profit. And so putting your patents in a patent pool isn't really going to help you in any way, because basically you would just be throwing this technology and throwing your money away. If, however, you're a company like Google, that's not your business model, or if you're a company that is more of the device manufacturer, you're more of the user of the technology than the developer of it, then you can put the patents in and it helps the ecosystem and you're seen as a good guy and you don't have to worry about it. You let somebody else handle the licensing because it wasn't going to bring a lot of money for you anyway.
Interesting. And we'll see where Google goes with this, if they embrace the pooling model more generally and all the way, or if they just do it for some of their technology. Susan Decker's at Bloomberg.com. You can follow her on Twitter at SueDecker1. Thank you so much for joining us today, Susan.
Thank you.
Jawbone announced yesterday that it'll start shipping its Jawbone UP3 on April 20th. Based on what the company promised, the product is too little too late. Dan Graziano is an associate editor for CNET and joins us now. Welcome to you, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Is it UP3 or UP3?
It's UP3.
Okay, UP3. We'll go with UP3. Now, Jawbone promised a waterproof UP3 by the end of 2014. What are they actually delivering?
Splash proof. It won't be waterproof. You can't swim with it. So it'll be water resistant, where you can wear it while doing the dishes. You can wear it in the rain. You can even wear it in the shower. So that's better than the Fitbit Charge, which can't be worn in the shower. But you can't wear it while swimming, which they promised. And it's a big letdown.
Definitely. So isn't it kind of, you know, rare for a company to promise features like this and then be completely unable to deliver it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's pretty much tech 101. You don't do that. You never overpromise. If anything, you undersell it, like kind of Pebble did when they were doing the Kickstarter. And then they came back and said, hey, thanks for the great support. We're actually going to be water resistant up to, I believe it's 3 ATMs, and you can swim with the Pebble.
So you can take a shower with it. So Robert Scoble will be all right with this. Now, what can you do with the Jawbone UP3 exactly? What is good about this device?
Jawbone has one of the best apps out there for activity tracking. And you can track your steps, your calories burned, your distance. And the new thing is your heart rate. And it doesn't use the normal flashing green lights like the Fitbit Charge does or the Mio Band. It uses a bioimpedance, which is what you would find in scales. It sends an electroshock through your body, and it can measure your heart rate, your pulse. And like scales that you can purchase, they can measure your body fat and stuff like that. I believe the Jawbone UP3 can't do the body fat, but it's something that could happen in the future. Jawbone says the technology should give you a more accurate reading, and that's been the issue with heart rate monitoring from a Fitbit in the past, for example.
So, I mean, this stuff sounds great, but, you know, they were promising this stuff the end of last year. It's coming late. It's not having all these features. They're facing competition, not just from Fitbit, but obviously a lot of these other wearables. And now the Apple Watch is coming out. What do you think? I mean, you know, Jawbone has had kind of a history of having kind of problematic releases where they have good products and they have some good software, but they're not quite able to get it together. Do you feel like this has any potential in the market, or do you feel like this might be too little too late for them?
I think it still has potential. Jawbone is one of the best wearable companies out there. I always see up 24s everywhere because they're fashionable. They're not big. People like to wear them. And the Jawbone app, like I said, it's one of the best ones out there. So even at $180, it still should sell pretty well.
All right. Well, Dan Graziano is at CNET.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Dan Graziano. It's just like it sounds. Thanks for joining us today, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, not content to censor the internet within China, the Chinese government has deployed a new weapon that enables them to censor the web worldwide. It's being called the Great Cannon, according to a report released today by the Citizen Lab at University of Toronto's Monk School of Global Affairs. It's essentially an organized way to deliver a sustained DDoS attack, but with a difference. It works by intercepting web and advertising traffic coming from outside China and intended for the Chinese search engine Baidu, then redirecting that traffic against the target outside of China. The first deployment of this Great Cannon were attacks last month that lasted weeks against the anti-censorship site Greatfire and also GitHub, both of which provided resources for Chinese citizens to get around domestic censorship within China, and both of which are located in the United States. The attacks are apparently still ongoing. And what's interesting about this, Christina Warren, is, you know, it would be great for the United States to point its finger at China and talk about what an evil doer they are. But in fact, it's very, very similar to one developed and used by the NSA and its British counterpart, GCHQ, for which they used it for surveillance, of course. And in this case, it's being used for a Chinese purpose, censorship.
Right. I mean, that kind of underscores, I think, exactly what the problem with kind of, you know, these some of this stuff is that, you know, it kind of puts us in an awkward position from a policy standpoint, because we can be critical of China for, oh, you're going after, you know, U.S.-based, you know, sites and services such as GitHub, and you're, you know, trying to, you know, do these targeted attacks, and this is terrible. But then we do similar things, and the GCHQ does similar things, all in the name of what we claim, you know, whether it's surveillance or in China's case, I guess it's protecting, you know, their country or whatnot. And, you know, we're all doing it for various ideologies, I guess what I'm getting at. And it's hard to make the argument that one is better than the other when both attacks are basically the same type of thing.
Well, it's an interesting sub story to the larger story of globalization of information. And you see multiple attempts in different ways, ways that are characteristic of the sort of, I guess you'd call it, the political or national character of the sites. For example, the right to be forgotten in Europe.
Right.
It's a bureaucratic European style way to censor what they want to censor, the globe. So they want the right to be forgotten to be extended to all versions of Google search engine and Bing and Yahoo and so on, so that they're censoring worldwide. There was a case in Canada where a Canadian judge ordered that a certain type of censorship be done worldwide. Here, China is censoring, theoretically, at least worldwide or outside the boundaries of China. And, you know, if you look at something like GitHub, I mean, the services or whatever is on there that enables Chinese users to get around censorship is just a tiny fraction of what GitHub is for. So they're crashing the whole site just for this one little tool that's on GitHub.
Right. No, which is ridiculous. I mean, and I think that it is also kind of telling that, you know, it's one thing, I think, to want to say, we don't want these things coming into our country. And you know, we can have our own opinions about that. But it's one thing for a country to try to make those sorts of, you know, rules or laws or regulations. It's another thing to say, we don't want it to be anywhere, so we're going to use our power to destroy the site because we consider it such a threat. We can't keep people from inside our country from accessing it because they use VPNs and all sorts of other things. So instead, we're just going to take it down. And that's really scary. And that's that sort of thing is really insidious, I think, if it's kind of taken even further than, you know, it starts with GitHub now, but what if they're going to eventually go against other things, you know, and GitHub has been able to mitigate the attack pretty well, but some of the other services and maybe some of their other targets won't be so lucky.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one analyst called it said it was a big deal because it involves the normalization of widespread and public use of an attack tool to enforce censorship. So it is a new thing. It's combining hacking, DDoS attacks, and censorship outside the borders of China, outside the borders of the censoring authority. So this is a whole new world now, and we'll keep an eye on it and see what they do with the Great Canon next. Well, Amazon yesterday announced a machine learning service for developers who build applications on Amazon Web Services. Machine learning is the use of sophisticated algorithms to extract meaning from huge data sets. The new feature is called Amazon Machine Learning, and it's a direct competitor to Microsoft's Azure Machine Learning, announced last summer. Expect Google to announce their entry any second now.
Yes.
After complaining about the Federal Aviation Administration's slow and grudging approval for drone tests, Amazon yesterday was approved to test drones outdoors. They had won similar approval for a previous drone last month, but it had taken so long that the approved drone was already obsolete and no longer worth testing.
Right. It is worth noting that, as best we can tell, the same, constraints are still in place, where it has to be manned by a pilot. It has to be within sight. It can't be over 400 meters, and it can't be over 400 feet up in the air, and it can't be more than 55 pounds. So they still have all those other regulations in place. The good news is that at least it's now a model they can actually test versus what happened last month, which was by the time it was approved, they weren't even using that model anymore. And that was one of the reasons that Amazon told Reuters last week that they had started testing things in British Columbia, just 2,000 feet from the U.S. border.
And they're also testing in British Britain. They have a U.K. Lab where they're testing certain types of drone things as well. And, of course, Google tests their delivery drone in Australia, anywhere but the U.S., I guess. Well, in other follow-up, Samsung's Galaxy S6 and S6 Edge went on sale today. I don't know why anybody's announcing anything today. Everybody's talking about the Apple Watch. Anyway, this happened a little over an hour ago, and in the U.K., Germany, and France, several hours ago. The phone ships in other markets next week. Samsung is predicting record sales of the phones, and some analysts are expecting the company to sell 50 million of them by the end of the year. Well, in product update news, Twitter is testing a feature that will let brands pin downloadable apps to their Twitter profiles in the iPhone Twitter app. The pinned app section would include each app's rating on the App Store and a button to download or open the app, and I would expect something similar for the Play Store on Android phones. This sounds like a good idea, I think. You know, if somebody's following a brand and that brand has an app, why not put it on their Twitter profile?
No, I think it's great. And I think it's also, you know, increasingly going to be one of those things, especially if you're accessing it within Twitter's mobile app. You know, if you have easy access to just one tap to take you to the Google Play Store or to the App Store or Amazon or wherever, I think it's great, you know, and I think it also adds value to kind of say to brands, you know, spend more time on Twitter because we're letting you promote kind of your entire lifestyle, and this can kind of be your hub for all of your social activity.
Well, we got big numbers and some really weird news coming up in just a sec. But first, let's talk about Prosper. Prosper is the modern way to borrow money. You don't want to borrow money from a bank or from a relative. Don't do that. You want to do it from Prosper because they will allow you to get up to $35,000 in as few days from somebody who wants to invest in you and your project. In my case, I could use that $35,000 to buy two or three Apple Watch Edition smartwatches. How great would that be? Much easier, much, much easier than launching a Kickstarter to get those watches. But seriously, if you want to remodel your kitchen, if you want to pay off your high interest credit cards, it's a very good financial decision to do something like that because you'll save a ton of money and you'll get out of debt much more quickly if you are, in fact, in debt. It's much better than racking up more debt on your credit cards. So now and for a limited time, Prosper is offering TWIT viewers and listeners a $50 Visa gift card with your new low interest loan. You can get up to $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days and a $50 Visa gift card. Go to prosper.com/TWIT for this special offer just for the TWIT Army. Well, we've got some big numbers for you. 5.2 and 6.7. Those sound like small numbers, but those are in fact big numbers because that's the percentage decline in PC shipments in the first quarter of 2015 compared with the same quarter last year, according to Gartner and IDC, respectively. They don't agree on the exact percentage drop in unit sales, but they do agree that it was the lowest number of first quarter PC shipments since 2009. That's a total of 71.7 million PCs shipped worldwide, according to Gartner, or just 68.5 million PCs, according to IDC. I thought we were out of the woods, Christina Warren, with the decline in PCs. I thought the PC was dead, and then it wasn't dead, and now it's dead again.
Now it's dead again, yeah. No, I mean, it's like we had that dead cat bounce, and now it's declining again. I think it'll be interesting to see. I think it's possible that maybe the cycle has just changed, and it's possible maybe, you know, the reason that things seem to improve, you know, a couple of quarters ago was that people were kind of in the middle of an upgrade cycle. But I'm always curious how they define PCs and what they consider a PC versus what they consider a tablet. You know, does the Surface count as a tablet or a PC? And what's kind of the price point on those things? Because that always, to me, kind of has a lot to do with how we interpolate this story. Definitely I think that kind of the trend of the phone becoming the center of the universe is only going to continue. So scary numbers for sure if you're a PC OEM.
I think there's clearly a long-term slide because there's so many other devices, but I think one underappreciated feature is the recession. I mean, yeah. You know, the recession depressed sales of PCs. This is something, you know, companies, if, you know, obviously there was an employment issue. So if you're not hiring companies, you're buying fewer PCs and so on. And so I think a lot of those were put off. So there's pent up demand
right.
for PCs. And then when the recession eased, I think, you know, that's when the buying happened. That's when the hiring happened. And you got this uptick and everybody said, oh, it's not dead. You know, it's not declining after all. But no, it's declining. It's just kind of doing this thing on its
right.
way down. And, you know, PCs aren't going to go away anytime soon. But they, you know, again, there are so many other options, especially tablets and all the rest. So this is expected. Still, it has to be said that, you know, 71.7 million in a quarter, that's a lot of units for something that can be pretty expensive. So it's not horrible news. It's just not great news for the PC industry. Well, in news you can lose, we told you yesterday about the hack attack by ISIS sympathizers on France's public television station TV5 Monde, which took out 11 channels and involved the defacement of social media accounts. I wondered during that segment whether some blame for the attack rested with the station and possible lax security, kind of like it did with the Sony hack earlier in the year last year. But now we're hearing that one day after the attack, a journalist was being interviewed at the station about the attack, and behind him, the station's Twitter and Instagram passwords were visible on a wall behind the interviewee. Footage of the TV5 Monde offices on another TV show on another station appeared to show passwords written on a yellow
right.
Post-it note stuck to some of the monitors in the office. I've seen this myself. I've walked through companies in Silicon Valley, companies literally like HP, where you see, you know, in a heavy trafficked area, you see a monitor with a yellow post-it note that says password equals. And then in one case, the password was password.
Right. No, I mean, I think that we always underestimate just how poor, you know, information security practices are at a lot of big organizations, big media companies, you know, even big tech companies. You know, people, it's not just individuals that have poor security practices, right? It's big brands and big companies too. And I mean, this is just the perfect example where you're literally interviewing someone about, you know, these hacks, and in the background, you're showing, you know, in full HD glory, because we all have these high resolution cameras now, passwords that everyone can see. I mean, it's sort of a nightmare.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to call it. I'm going to say that when the dust clears on this thing, they're going to find that the station has horrible security. And that's one of the reasons they were able to do this hack as they did it. Because, you know, with good security, this would have been very, very difficult. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Steve Overton in Vermont, who posted this picture on Twitter. He says he watches TNT at his messy desk while browsing, wait for it, Pinterest. Yes, he's a unicorn. He's a
awesome
male person who uses Pinterest, and he's proud of it. So there he is, messy desk and all, and he's got Pinterest on a tablet at the bottom. Very
awesome.
Cool. Yeah. How do you watch or listen to TNT? Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. And Christina Warren, what are you working on right now that the Apple Watch thing is sort of like fading until the 24th when it ships?
Until it ships, yeah. No, I mean, I've got, you know, just other various things kind of going on. We're doing a lot of Meerkat and kind of periscoping in the office. I'm actually going to be working on an article this afternoon kind of about the Apple Watch kind of fury, the whole fear of missing out angle, where, you know, now that, that the supply seems constrained, you know, people who weren't sure if they should get it or not are now kind of debating with themselves, do I need to buy this? You know, because it's now that it's scarce, it seems more all that more desirable. So that's something I'm working on for this afternoon.
That's cool. I had a weird emotion this morning because I wasn't really going to stay up late for this thing. And you know, my son Kevin sent me a note and said, hey, you want me to buy your watch? And I'm like, yeah, I guess. Yeah, sure. Go ahead. And then this morning I thought, what was I thinking? If he hadn't done that, I'd be looking at, you know, end of summer, you know, for this thing. So I just, you know, had this weird kind of like, whoops, I almost blew it. But fortunately, I was saved. It's a great reason to have kids. You just,
definitely.
FYI. All right, Christina Warren, well, thank you so much for co-anchoring today. Great stuff as always. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time.
All right, take care. You can subscribe to Tech News Today and choose your favorite way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can also watch us live, of course, every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv or in the app or browser plugin of your choice. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV, and you can follow me via RSS. You ready for it? Get a pencil. It's feeds.feedburner.com/MikeElgin-Google User Feed. No, I'm serious. That's what it is. And that's a RSS feed of my Google Plus feed. So if you want to sign up for that, there it is. Let us know what you think. Send us email to tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW. Don't miss Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific every weeknight. And that is the Tech News Today. My name is Mike Elgin. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you Monday.